are going to be talking about our pre-release experiences and other awesome things. I am joined here today by Kelly Reed.
Hello.
And Chaz Volpe.
Hello.
And we are going to be talking about what it was like. So, Kelly and Chaz, you guys were both at pre-releases. I want to hear all about it. One of the things that we talked about, that one of the rumors has been going about, is that the BFZ pre-release packs may have been pre-seeded. They may have had more mythics than people were used to. They may have had more expeditions. Did you guys open up any expeditions or see any opened at your event? And then, just after that, tell me what it was generally about at the pre-release.
Yeah, the pre-release I went to was about 16 people. It was a fun little place that served nachos and beer and had video games and sports. And it was a great place near Portland called The Game Room. If you're in the area, definitely check it out. There was one person who opened a Misty Rainforest, which is just a win for everybody in the room that he didn't open up a crappy ones. And the guy was not really interested in keeping it. And so he ended up just selling it to the highest cash bidder, which I made sure was me. They're really very, very pretty objects. They're really going to be, the blue fetches especially, are really going to be desirable by vintage players, legacy players. I mean, there's just no comparing these to the originals. They're just spectacular. So I feel like people might overestimate the glut on the market. There aren't going to be that many of these. But yeah, I think they're going to be very desirable, and they're only going to get more desirable as the months and the years go on. My pre-release pool was really, really, really good. Ruinous Path was an all-star, as I'll be writing about in my article this week. I actually went 4-0. I actually did not lose a single game. My deck was really good. I played badly. I made mistakes. I forgot to scry after I mulliganed. But my deck was blue-black, Eldrazi, Ingest, and it just bailed me out game after game, even though I tried my best to lose. So I got a little Golden Jace trophy, opened some good stuff, had to buy my expedition, but so be it. And it was overall a really positive experience. People weren't going like crazy about the cards, like no one was screaming, oh my god, Ulamog or whatever. But people seemed to enjoy themselves. I had a blast. This limited format looks like a blast. Ingest is kind of a dog mechanic for Constructed right now, but in Limited, it played really, really interestingly. So I was really happy. I really liked pre-releases, and I was glad that I got to go out to this one. Chaz, what about you?
Yeah, so not a huge turnout in relative to a lot of other people, but so 25 people, I think like 25 to 30 people, and again, it wasn't a huge turnout, and let me preface this rant by saying I've been playing this game a long time, and I haven't been to a pre-release since Innistrad Block, but I've been to a lot of pre-releases over the course of playing this game. And the one thing I kind of felt, and I don't know if a lot of people will disagree, agree, it's going to vary, but this is just from what I was observing at the pre-release, and this is not something I've really observed before, and I have to say, it was a really somber pre-release, and consequently, no one opened an expedition, and I kind of think those two go in tandem, because here we are, you know, Battle for Zendikar, obviously people are going to have varying opinions of the set just from the rares and mythics. Doug, you wrote a great article about the upcoming standard. Kelly, you wrote a really good article about upcoming standard as well that I wanted to talk about. But so no one's really played with the cards before, and I think people's perceptions of that will change. But I've really tried to be optimistic about this set, and I got that feeling that a lot of people, even on like social media, there was some people that were excited about opening like an Ulamog or something like that, but overall, I mean, the expeditions really are overshadowing this set, and I kind of had a feeling that was going to happen, and here we are talking about it. I'm ranting to you guys that it did happen. I mean, no one opened an expedition. I didn't see anyone get even really excited about opening up an Ulamog or a Gideon or something like that, and it was just a really somber experience, and, you know, but On any other pre-release without expeditions, people would have been happy to open up the $20 mythic or something like that. But you know, I did okay for myself. I opened up a lot of mediocre stuff. I went 3-1, ended up going Jund stuff, and the sealed was okay, but kind of really leaned on people just opening up bombs. And if their bombs are better, you know, you're kind of screwed. But I ended up opening an Ulamog as, like, my winnings and a Sire of Stagnation. So overall, it wasn't terrible, but, again, no Expedition, and people aren't going to be very pleased about that. So, I don't know. I'd like your guys' thoughts on that. Again, people are going to have different opinions, but that's just the general kind of reaction I got to the set.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I didn't quite experience that, but, like, you know, because someone did open an Expedition, but no one really cared. It wasn't like the room went nuts, but, and, like, if people were like, oh, that's really cool, and the dude, like, looked it up online, was like, oh, my God, it's worth a ton of money, and then it was kind of just business as usual. People seemed like they enjoyed casting giant monsters. I'm not sure that they enjoyed losing with their 10 drops in their hand game after game, as I saw happen. So I think in that regard, sealed deck, these giant monsters are actually a deck building trap that new players kind of get sucked into. They just want to play all the fatties, and they feel like they have permission to do so. But, like, I don't know. I think the Expeditions in general are drawing attention away from the rest of the set. But the question really remains is how much value will they draw away from the rest of the set? Because eventually, market demand will dictate prices. So, I mean, will Ruinous Path be a $10, $20, $5 card? It's definitely one of the best cards in the set, but, like, just how diluted are rare prices going to be because people are trying to open packs for Expeditions, or they just feel like perceptually the other cards aren't as valuable? I don't know the answer to that, but I think that anybody who's overlooking cards in this set and downgrading them in some weird way because Expeditions exist, I think there's an opportunity for people to be buying these cards while they're cheap, like there were when Khazad Tarkir fetch lands were under $10. Remember, that wasn't that long ago.
One thing you had mentioned earlier, Chaz, when we were chatting for the show notes, was that people have been evaluating this set and not really knowing where it is because we haven't had time to play with it, and that often people are rating and talking about cards when they haven't even played with them. And I went back in my research and I looked at LSV's reviews for Hangerback Walker. He gave it 4.0 in Limited, which he later revised to a 5.0. And he gave it a 3.5 in Constructed, saying, this will be seeing play in the Thopter artifact decks, and it may be able to be played for value later on. I think it's the best card in Standard right now. You know, I don't blame him for undervaluing it, saying it was pretty good versus, like, crazy good. But you had talked about how hard it is to evaluate this set in the abstract and about reviews of it. So I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit more.
Sure. And I'm going to use a little bit of Kelly's article, too. I mean, Kelly really kind of nailed it, and you alluded to it as well. And using Hangerback Walker is a great example because, yeah, no one really knew thought about Hangerback Walker as, like, the new Goblin Rabble Master, the $35 rare out of Magic Origins, but that's because, you know, it's really hard to evaluate a set before you're actually playing the cards, and that's with any set, not just Battle for Zendikar. I just released my evaluation for Battle for Zendikar Mythics, and I did the same thing for Origins. I went through the Mythics and the Rares, and just looking back on Origins, you know, I didn't really assess cards like Jace, Vryn's Prodigy, just like as one that was glaring to me. I try to be as on point as I possibly can, but I didn't kind of say he was terrible, but I didn't say, you know, this was going to be the $45 rare of the set because, or mythic of the set because, you know, again, I didn't play with it. I thought it was serviceable enough, but not so good where suddenly everyone wants to play them. So again, you know, people are going to make mistakes before even playing with them. Obviously, some of the pros that have been around for a long time have a better grasp on card evaluation. So obviously, when LSV or Top Level Podcast or something like that says X card is going to be good, obviously a lot of people are going to go out and start buying that card because, you know, they said so. So just looking back, like, you know, I didn't really misevaluate Hangerback Walker, but I didn't think Hangerback Walker was going to be that card. I kind of misevaluated, like, Goblin Pile Driver and Evolutionary Leap. you know, not to necessarily say they're terrible cards, but they just didn't end up being the, you know, chase rares of the set. And, you know, here we are later looking back on them. And, you know, people do make mistakes. But I think for this set, I think the trend is continuing where people are just not settling in on what standard is going to be.
Let's talk about what we did get right, though. Because, yeah, like cards like Jace, I gave it a really bad review when it first came out. I blew that call completely. But I want to recap a few previous podcasts where, I mean, when we saw Hangar Back Walker, I would have to go back and check my exact words, but I'm pretty sure my assertion was that it was among the best creatures in the set. And as my article last week detailed, I played with it, and it's true. It is as scary as you think it is, because there's enough support for cards like Hardened Scales that it's the engine you're looking for. So I gave a deck list in my article, so I didn't really need to say a whole lot more about that, but like we were all in consensus that the creature was insane and that ordering at $8 was risky, but the payoff could be huge. So we'll see how that goes for the Pro Tour weekend, but I think that card is here to stay.
One thing is clear for me about Standard is that there are nothing that really rises to the top, which tells me that over the first few weeks we're going to be seeing switching from deck to deck to deck, and that there will be a lot of things flashing in and that may end up being flash in the pan style things. This Bring to Life deck may be something that's amazing and sticks around, or it may be something that only peters out after the first few weeks. Kind of like how Solar Flare made its resurgence back in Innistrad, and then people realized that it just couldn't cut the mustard. But I look at cards like Drowner in Sorrows, the Blue Drowning Eldrazi. it's not obviously not called Drowner in Sorrows. But cards like that, cards like From Beyond are really fascinating because these are kind of the tier 2 level B style cards that will be an engine of a deck, or that people will realize like, okay, well this is really good in a format where we're just going to grind out into board stalls. I think that we'll be seeing more and more of those cards get attention. The fear for me is that it reminds me somewhat of Masks Block Standard in that there was not a clear forefront card. So you had to look at cards like Rising Waters and Ramosian Sergeant as being cards that ended up being huge format-defining cards, but kind of sucked in the abstract. And I know people are cringing when I say Ramosian Sergeant sucked. I guess what I'm saying is a deck that relied on tapping out every turn to get a 2-2 or so, and then casting Reverent Mantra to attack through was really good. I guess also on the basis that you could use Lin Sivi at the time and the Legend rules were different. But that's sort of the thing. I mean, people weren't exactly casting, aside from Brian Killer, people weren't casting big Rith the Awakener dragons and smashing people. And that's the era of Standard I wonder whether we're going into of incremental advantages. I'm going to count up my Eldrazi Scions versus yours, and we're going to see where we are. And that's an era of Standard that I hope that we avoid.
All the testing I've done shows that there are decks that can come out the gate screamingly fast. Landfall decks can do it. The green Hardened Scale decks can do it. I don't think we're at the point where we're grinding out incremental advantage with 2/2s. I think the biggest importance is going to be mana advantage because cards like Ulamog are game ending when you cast them in the majority of circumstances. While cards like Oblivion Sower get mana advantage and they're huge and they dominate the board. I think this is going to be a format of trading haymakers as opposed to grinds you out style.
Yeah, I think we're going to be seeing a very interesting Standard, and it's going to be hard to adjust because we're so used to having a lot of cards in the card pool, and then suddenly we're not having a lot of cards in the card pool, and that has to, as we go along, that kind of this new two-block cadence is going to kind of really shake things up. But yeah, to what you said, Kelly, sometimes like you know when we first evaluate these sets, you know it. You do get some things wrong, but you do get some things right. And there have been some cards that a lot of people have been talking about for what seems to be since the beginning of the spoilers now. Gideon, Oblivion Sower, you know, those types of cards when you know, people are saying over and over and over again that, you know, this seems good. This seems good just by looking at it. This seems good now that I have started playtesting it with it a little bit. This card is good now that I have playtested a lot with it. And, you know, those are the cards that you kind of yeah, okay, whatever. Maybe they're not the super flashiest cards ever. Like, Oblivion Cellar isn't really that flashy. It's not like a super crazy mythic that does something insane. But it is a very good mythic, and it's going to it's going to do what it's going to do in Standard, and that is it's an efficient body that breaks stalemates and gives you quite the bit of a mana advantage to then start dropping cards like Ulamog, which will be a card in Standard, I'm fairly certain, because whether it's a one of or a two of in these kind of ramp decks, you said it best, there's going to be a ramp deck somewhere. I don't know what it looks like yet, but it's going to be there, and Ulamog will probably be a part of that. Not probably, definitely will be a part of that that list, because it's just, for 10 mana, you're getting so much in 10 mana that no other card in the format is going to be able to replicate right now. So
I have a list for you, actually. I've been playing with that ramp deck a lot in my testing. And what I find is that you need a crazy amount of mana dorks, and you need a crazy amount of ways to jump up by 2 mana and not just 1. The name of the game is generally casting cards like Whisperer of the Wilds, which can tap for 2 mana. And you play 4 of those, 4 Rattleclaw Mystics, 4 Shaman of Forgotten Ways, 4 Beastcaller Savants, yes, 16 mana dorks. And you play 4 Kozilek Channelers because they're big. They turn on Whisperer of the Wilds, and you play 4 Oblivion Sowers. Every time I cast Oblivion Sower, I feel like I'm cheating at Magic. And if I've managed to put my opponent behind on a land because I cast Crumble to Dust, that's one of the most game-breaking things you can do to somebody. Every time I cast that, it felt like I was playing a different game. And Ulamog is incredible. It's because of the cast trigger. Even if he gets countered, then you're still nuking 2 lands. They're 2 best creatures. He's like a Dragonlord Atarka on steroids. Ulamog's the real deal. There's nothing better to cast in the game with an arbitrarily large amount of mana. And Oblivion Sower is the best way to get there. The Eldrazi ramp deck is really susceptible to getting killed by blue-black control. But in a lot of cases, it just outpowers the opponent. I mean, you're casting turn 4 Oblivion Sowers, turn 6, turn 5 Ulamogs. If you can chain that together, it's really hard to come back from. I think the deck just wants one more card that acts like a land destruction spell, because it's actually pretty easy to chain Crumbled Dust into Oblivion Sower into Ulamog. The problem is you can only play 4 of each of those.
Right.
The deck runs 3 Ulamogs because you often want to cast through all of them. You want one in your hand at all times, except for the first 3 turns. But, like, chain casting those is unbeatable, even if they get killed, countered, exiled, whatever. So, like, yeah, that's a real deck, but I think it's going to take a more talented player than me to figure out the optimal build.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like every new set, you know, things are said in that kind of interim period before the set comes out, and the little bit of testing that's done, and then all of a sudden, you know, either that holds true or it doesn't. But it's just like, it's not, a lot of stuff isn't really a huge surprise. Like, but I don't know. It's just like this set is just a very unique situation, because I want there to be stuff, like, obviously, you know, insiders are listening to this, people listen to this for financial advice, and I want to be able to give them that advice. And I wrote the article about my mythic evaluation, saying that there is going to be cards that, you know, maybe they don't hold long term, but there are going to be cards that are in demand and will spike. And we've obviously seen that even over the course of doing this cast. Like, Gideon overnight is now like a $40 card. Could have been buying them at like $20 to $24, whether it be eBay or TCG or what have you. But I don't know. It's just like you have the expeditions, and it feels like people are going to be buying extra packs or something like that just to play that lotto. And I can understand that, you know, oh, I open an Ulamog, but it's not an expedition. And, you know, people, I'm just seeing already, like, I use Puka Trade sometimes. I mean, people aren't really even looking for Battle for Zendikar stuff at all anymore, and it's only been the pre-release. So whether that is just demand getting filled by other people from pre-orders or people pulling stuff from the pre-release, I don't know how much demand there's going to be for X cards unless they do well at said Pro Tour or, you know, early on in the Standard that ends up being good throughout Battle for Zendikar Standard until we get Oath of the Gatewatch and subsequent sets after that. But for right now, I mean, I'm trying to remain optimistic. There are those cards that we've been saying. A lot of them, the boat's kind of sailing on them. So, I mean, we're going to have to see. And you guys make great points about playtesting the cards and actually having the cards in hand to cast, rather than just theory crafting. Because theory crafting is just theory crafting at the end of the day.
But, you know, one of the things that I had found that with when deck building, and I'm not the great standard deck builder here, but one of the things that I had found was that every deck feels like it's 2 to 4 cards or, you know, short of something that could be a masterpiece. Like, there's this tension in how Jace Vryn's Prodigy is a really good card in blue-white control until the rotation, until we get BFC, and then it's like, okay, well, you have Ojutai's Command to bring back. You're not going to be snapcasting any counter spells with this because it works at sorcery speed. And some of the best removal is like Silk Wrap. And you're not going to be splashing an Abzan Charm. So then you ask, well, should I be running Jace and Siege Rhino in a Siege Rhino deck? I mean, the answer is probably yes on that, by the way. But it feels like everything is just a little bit short of being really good. And I wanted to know if you guys had felt that. Kelly, you talked about running 16 mana dorks. You didn't mention Leaf Gilder, which is probably the best mana dork around right now, but it just feels like there's...
Mythic is strictly better than Leaf Gilder.
There's just a lot of stuff, I think, around that is on the verge of good enough, but it needs just a little bit something more. Like, the numbers could have been tweaked just a little bit. I had found that with Landfall, for example, like Slab Hammer was almost good enough, but couldn't actually get you through. And that one of the problems with Landfall was that, and I don't think it will sustain itself as a deck, is that you run out of land drops, and yeah, there's nothing. There's nothing that pulls you back into that.
Right. You make a great point, and I think I know one of the points you're going to say too, Kelly. Like, When playtesting, I did feel that way. I felt like some things were just right there, but not like super optimal, and you're missing something. Like, I love Nissa's Renewal in this standard, and I think it's going to be a card that's played in standard, but it's like, you're just playing Nissa's Renewal just to get 3 lands and 7 life. Like, I was saying to myself, like, man, I wish there was just like one landfall card that I can stick in here, or 1 or 2 landfall cards I can stick in here in this ramp deck that have a good synergy with Nissa's Renewal, that it's just not, like, when I rip it off the top, it's just not just a Nissa's Renewal, right?
I think that card is Retreat to Emeria, because that turns your Nissa's Renewal into a board presence and or a way to kill people.
Right. So it's just like those little things that... you know, might not be worked out and solved just yet, but I think we'll be getting there very soon.
So one of the few decks that I felt like when I was brewing, I definitely encountered this problem too, Doug. Like the ingest decks, you can't dedicate yourself to the ingest mechanic. There's just not the support. The few decks that I saw that really had support across the format were the ones where there was a significant overlap in thematic elements within both different blocks. So to that end, the fact that Whisperer of the Wilds taps for 2 mana when you're trying to cast big creatures because you already have a 4/4 on the board plays really nicely with the idea of casting things like Kozilek's Channeler, trying to cast things like Oblivion Sower and Ulamog. Same with the Hardened Scales deck. Khan's block had a tremendous amount of support for +1/+1 counters, and then they printed Undergrowth Champion, which took that deck over the top. Doug, I know you like Mana Gorger Hydra. I think that he's just worse than Undergrowth Champion, though. They both get crazy, and the champion's way harder to kill. But, like, those are the decks that feel like they have a lot going for them, the ones that have support in both blocks simultaneously. Like, they may very well print stuff in the block after Zendikar that care about the Exile Zone as well, but, like, that's not now. And so to figure out what's going to win the Pro Tour, I'm looking at the decks that survive rotation mostly and seeing what the core synergies there are, and then figuring out what from BFC slots into them to take them to the next level.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kelly. So I think on that end, we're going to be seeing, there's already kind of archetypes being discussed. There's already a lot of different decks out there. You alluded to them in your articles, and I think with just a little bit of research, people can go out and find them as well. And I agree with you. There's definitely things that are there that will be competitive in the coming weeks. But, I mean, there's still going to be room for new innovation for at least a little while. But in terms of financials, you know, a lot of this stuff is just not going to hold its price, I don't think. But that's not to say that for at least a little bit of time, while the supply is not at its highest, there's going to be demand for X mythics and rares when they do show up at the Pro Tour on a Star City stream or something like that. So there is opportunities. It's just slim pickings at this point.
I think Chaz covered it. There's going to be opportunities. There already have been that have come and gone. There will be new opportunities that come and go. And then I think the really important part here is pay attention to the first Star City Open of the season. Pay attention to what happens at the Pro Tour. Things are going to be in flux for quite some time. And then by the time we figure it all out, we're getting a new set again. This two-block rotation thing is really going to shake up Magic as a whole and really make our jobs a lot more interesting. So, yeah, I think it'll be fun. I think that a lot of people are dogging on the set. I think the critiques are apt, but I think it remains a fun, solid set that I'm excited to play with. I had a blast at the pre-release, and I think that Standard is going to be really entertaining to watch at this Pro Tour.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just, I guess, a final couple points here. I don't know. It felt like the pre-release packs were seeded. I think there probably was more of a chance to get Expeditions or the stamped Mythic Foil stuff. So that kind of added a whole new dynamic to what really can break out, because now they're doing all these stamped foils of all these mythics and rares now. And, you know, yeah, you're just going to really have to keep your ear to the ground. And I think the Expeditions are really, like, a lot of people were kind of doom and gloom about the Expeditions. And not to be doom and gloom, but they will suck up a good amount of the overall EV of the set. So at least for a little while, just kind of look at Battle for Zendikar as you would any other set without Expeditions. And I think you already had a good chance to profit. And I think there's still some time to come that you will be able to profit. I still like one of the couple undercosted mythics like Drana. I really, really like Drana. I think it's a very powerful mythic. So, yeah, in terms of pre-release, again, I can only say what my experience was. Just not a super amount of excitement. So the hype of the actual set, not the Expeditions, is going to come and go very quickly. But that hype will be renewed when X card does well on camera. So again, there's going to be opportunities out there.
Well, we have discussed a lot of Battle for Zendikar this week, including how the cards are actually shaping up as we play with them. Our opinions of them will change, as will yours. We are going to have some big events starting to click off pretty soon here. And when we have results, we'll be going over them with you so we can get a good idea of what the new Battle for Zendikar standard looks like. And until next week, I'm Doug.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
And you've been listening to QS Cast.